Hi guys, I'm fantasy author J.H. Fleming.
And if I put on a diaper and held a bow, I'd look like Cupid. It's a Valentine's Day. And with us, as always, the first Mandalorian to kill a mythosaur. It's Christopher. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Phil.
Are you guys ready to do some Valentine's Day stuff?
Heck yeah.
Nah, we don't. We have one thing that's about Valentine's Day. But you know what we should talk about? We just went to Superstars.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. It's all kind of a blur now, but it was so much fun. The getting there part was not so much fun.
No.
The day before we left, I woke up and my phone said, phone cannot register SIM card. And no matter what I did, I couldn't get my phone to register a SIM card. So the day before we left, I had to run to a phone place and get a new phone. On a new plan, all of the above. So, hey, my phone works now for those people who have called me and been like, why do you always ignore my calls and my text messages? Well, now I don't have a good excuse because all of it comes through. Except for if JH asks, then my stuff still doesn't work.
Lies.
It is doing a weird thing where whenever somebody group text, it like splits it up into like every time somebody responds, it like recreates the group plus or minus a few people. It's really weird.
Yeah. So it's not just affecting you. So it did it to my phone and our friend's phone to where so like there were four of us initially in one thread, one group, and it split it up to where now there are two groups, one with three of us, one still with four of us.
Yeah. And it was sending me back my own text messages like somebody else had sent them. It was weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like my messages would show up twice on my phone, once as like my in my send side, and then once as like somebody else had sent it. Like Chris's face right now, like what? Yeah, it's good.
Who still uses text messaging?
A lot of people, Chris. We're not all as advanced as you.
Mostly my family and a few random friends. If it's up to me, I'm using Discord.
Well, I wasn't given a choice. Phil was like, if you want to get a hold of me, tough.
I'm really going to blow your mind, Chris. Right, you ready for this? Sometimes I still call people.
Names?
My father.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I know better than to call JH. That doesn't do me a lot of good most of the time.
Sometimes.
Well, I mean, anybody that's not old enough to know what a 10-foot cord is for, there's no point in calling them.
All right, so that was our first misadventure was my phone, right? And then the morning we left for Superstars, we got up, packed the car, drove to the airport, parked in the long-term parking where we were going to leave my car for the week, get out, unload our suitcases, and my trunk latch broke. So my trunk couldn't close. I was in the parking lot slamming it, and it was just bouncing up and down like a trampoline. JH is like finally like, what are we gonna do? I was like, well, we either leave it like this and go on our trip or we don't go, so let's head on into the airport. I mean, honestly, like I could push it down where it didn't look like it was open so most people wouldn't have noticed, but I was more worried that we would get back and the stupid trunk light would have never timed out because I wasn't sure if there was a timeout on it or not. Spoiler alert, there is.
Yeah. I was also worried like a strong wind would blow it open or something and then just actually be open the whole time.
Yeah, it was pretty dumb. And then I got annoyed with the airline because I paid them extra money specifically so that we would board early so we didn't have to worry about our connection, you know, so that we'd be able to board early and sit near the front of the plane. And then it was also like if you upgrade these seats, we will not take your carry-on, right? So you'll be with the first group to board. We will not take your carry-on, all those things. Do you know how many of those things happened? None of them. They literally made us board last and took our carry-ons to send the rest of the way.
Yep.
I was not happy.
Yep. Yeah, so paid money for nothing.
I was even less happy when I asked the lady about it, like very politely, like, hey, I paid for these upgrades so that we wouldn't have to go through this. And she just straight ignored me and turned around and started like brushed me away and turned around and just started talking to the next person. And I'm like, all right, cool. Thanks, American Airlines. Appreciate you. Amazing.
So did you at least get some chicks for free?
I did not get any.
To go with your money for nothing?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I've missed you, Christopher. That was not the end of our misadventures. They extrapolated. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the right word. That's not the word. I'm going to extrapolate on them. How about that?
Compounded? Is that the word you're looking for?
They compounded, and I'm going to extrapolate that story. Is that right? Am I using those words right? Well.
Closer.
Extrapolate would be like if I took what you've done and tried to tell more of your story based on those details.
Yeah, right. Well, nobody ever said I was smart, including
expand.
Me.
Expand.
I'm just going to tell the rest of the story now. So we land in Colorado Springs, right? And we go to the carousel to get our luggage, and we wait for my stupid suitcase to show up. And our carry-ons they took away from us, those showed up, but my actual suitcase, it did not. And we stood there. We got there about 2:10, and by like 2:20, they made an announcement that was like, everything's been put on the carousel. If you are missing a bag, please speak to the baggage manager. Like, ah. So we went over and talked to the guy, and he's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure. And so there was some luggage that was abandoned, and I was like, there's one in that abandoned pile that looks similar, but it's not it. It's got somebody's name tag on it. And so he went and checked all the other luggage, and determined that everything else was like belonged to a group that had their flight changed or delayed or something. But mm-hmm. that one luggage that looked like mine just hadn't been claimed. So then it was obvious pretty quick that somebody had grabbed mine thinking it was theirs, right? So again, we figured this out about, I don't know, 2:20, 2:30-ish, right? At 4:30-ish, I was like, let's forget this. Let's go to the hotel and we'll just have to figure this out. And I walked back into his office and was like, hey, man. Well, Jake is pausing me.
Yeah, I was going to add, since you didn't mention it, he tried calling these people over and over mm-hmm. and over, and they weren't answering.
Yeah, shout out to the American Airlines lost baggage manager Cameron in Colorado Springs. That dude is amazing. He was on top of it. He was even like getting other people to start calling this number. They were just blowing up this phone over and over. So finally at like 4:30, I walk in there like, we're going to leave. And he was like, I understand. I'm sorry, man. We'll find it though. We'll make it. We'll get it. You know, we'll get your stuff. And as I was in his office, his phone rang, and it was finally the people. They had driven an hour away, mm-hmm. But they were turning around to come back. And so it ended up being this very nice couple. It was totally an accident, and they were super sweet and offered to give us a ride to the hotel so that we didn't have to wait for an Uber or anything. So that was really cool.
Yep.
Good times having our mm-hmm. luggage almost stolen. But then we were there. We made it. Oh, you know what else was stupid on our first day? I want to call out something else that was stupid on the first day. I texted our good Canadian. So he pretends to be so nice, our Canadian friend, Shane Eason. He pretends to be so polite and so nice. He had told me he was flying in the same day as us originally. So I texted him. I'm like, hey, when are you getting there? And he's like, I'm going to land around 2:00. So at that point, I'm jazzed, right? Because I'm like, oh, we're going to see Shane first thing. We can get a cab together. It's going to be great. I'm so excited. And we were like trying to call each other. And I missed, like, I realized he called me right after we got off our first connecting flight. I tried to call him. He didn't answer. And I was like, shoot, we must be in between flights, right? So I land in Colorado Springs and I have a text from us like, call me as soon as you can. And I'm like, oh, he must already be here. He's waiting. We got to hurry up, right? So I call him and he's like, hey, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm at the airport. Where are you? And he's like, oh, I don't fly until tomorrow. Amy thought it was so funny. Let it be on the record. Shane, you're not that funny. You are that funny. I wish he would have been there for my lost luggage. I would have made him sit with us the whole time.
Yeah, but then we would have to have gotten a car because we wouldn't have all fit in their car.
Yeah, we'd have made Shane get a car. It's fine. We would have made him sit with us for 2 hours and then made him get his own car. It's fine. So then we actually made it to the Antlers Hotel, which is really cool. It's in downtown Colorado Springs. I don't even remember that first night. I don't guess anything happened after that. We just like went to bed.
Yeah, we hung out at the bar for a little bit.
Oh, yeah,
there weren't many people around yet.
That's where we met. We meet JT at the bar.
Yes.
Yeah, he was cool. Shout out to JT. And then the next day was the opening day, like the pre-opening day. They call Skills Day. Is that what they call it now?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So we spent the first half of the morning. So basically, Skills Day. Chris is making a face, so I should probably explain this. So Skills Day is basically you sign up for one of two sessions. There's a morning session, an afternoon session, and multiple teachers teaching multiple topics, and you're just with them all day. And that's the one day that's not about business. It's about actual writing, like skill. So we chose, for the morning part of it, we chose Craig Martell, famously of the 20 Books 50K group. And he was teaching opening lines, like how to get really strong opening lines for your books, which was really cool. He's a great instructor, and he did like a lot of crowd participation, you know, because he had everybody like writing opening lines for things like Moby Dick and Mary Poppins and things like that, and then reading their opening, and everybody's kind of like critiquing him a little bit and stuff in real time. We ended up going to lunch with Craig. That was cool. And our friend Daniel Blatt. So shout out to both of them. That was super fun. Craig's awesome. If you guys ever get a chance to meet Craig Martell, he is among my favorite people we've met on the writing thing. He is super cool. In fact, just a shout out to him. Like I asked him, because he does a thing he calls this 5-minute author focus. Like every day, he does like a little 5-minute video on some kind of topic. And I was like, man, how do you come up with topics all the time? Because like we have the podcast, and sometimes I don't know what to talk about. And he goes, oh, well, I don't know. Do you have your email address handy? Which, of course, I didn't have a card on me. But fortunately, JH is more of an adult than me, and she did. And he sent us his 840 slides from his 5-minute author focus and was like, just rip these off of me. Use my stuff if you want. So we got a lot of content we can use. So that was super cool. What did we do the second half of the day? Jim Butcher.
Yep.
Yeah, Jim Butcher was teaching how to write crowning moments, how to write your epic crowning moments, which was pretty fun. There was a really funny thing in there about writing your crowning moments of suck. Yep. As well.
Well, because the focus was crowning moments of awesome. So like moments where like your protagonist can like do something really cool that's epic and whatnot. But someone had asked a question about the converse of that, where like crowning moments of suck, where like everything that can go wrong does go wrong. So he kind of derailed at that point and was like, that's really good, and kept going back to it.
Well, then when we did the break, because it's like, you know, the second half of the day, so there's a break in the middle. And we came back from the break, somebody had altered his slides to add the crowning moment of suck into his slides. It was pretty funny. Yeah, that was fun. Again, I'm going back into it was a blur. I guess that night we probably went to the bar?
Yes. So the bar was pretty much every single night. I don't think there was a night where we didn't go there. So,
Chris, you know what was funny about the bar at this convention? Normally, as you can imagine, the faces you make. Normally, as you can imagine, I'm the one who keeps us up late, and I'm the one ripping and roaring and like, yeah, I want to stay a little bit longer. And JH is usually like, come on, it's 2:00 in the morning. You got a panel at 8:00. Let's go to bed, right? So this time, two nights in a row, as we were like, I was like, I'm ready. Let's go. It's 1:00 in the morning. Let's go to bed. We would be walking towards the elevator, and somebody would be like, hey, JH, we're having a Lord of the Rings debate over here. We need your input. And she you're muted, Christopher.
Did you actually see her leave, or was it just like she vanished like, puff of smoke?
Like, no, there was so much better than that. Like one night we literally said goodnight to everyone at the bar, and I was sitting on like the edge. They had like the horseshoe shaped tables or whatever. And I was sitting on the edge, and I was like, all right, bye everyone. Good night. Yeah, we're going to bed. And then we made it like 20 steps. And the first one was like, JH, we're having this Lord of the Rings debate. We're having this Tolkien debate, and we need your expertise. And I was like, well, all right then. And I just turned and went right back to took my exact same seat back again.
So he says this, but I distinctly remember one of these nights, like we actually got in the elevator, went up to our floor, realized one of our friends might have had a situation and we needed to go rescue her. And as we returned and were walking back, Phil like threw me into the Lord of the Rings conversation. So I got sidetracked into that and he just continued on to go rescue our friend.
I didn't
like,
throw, okay, they I guess were what asking I'm doing. For you.
You did.
Daniel was like, totally we need you, Jage, come here, we need you. And I was like, they need you. I'll take care of this. You take care of that. And an hour and a half later, I got to go to bed. I solved my part in 2 minutes. Just for the record. And then I sat there for a long time. I even tried to interrupt at one point. I even went over and I was like, Daniel. And he like put up his finger. He's like, one moment. I got to finish this point. And then he kept talking. And then as soon as he stopped, I was like, all right, here we go. And then no, JH started talking again to give her point. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go get another old fashioned. This is dumb. So the last night, the final night, I went and found her friend Daniel, or our friend Daniel, but her Lord of the Rings buddy Daniel at like 10:30. And I'm like, Daniel, it is 10:30 at night right now. You go find her and you start talking to her about Tolkien right now. I want you to start talking to her about Tolkien right now so that I can go to bed at a reasonable hour. Oh, it was super fun. We did a ton of great panels. We met a ton of great people. I feel like we should shout them out, but I also know I'm going to forget some. So they're going to have to forgive me, I guess, or maybe you just won't tell them. Maybe they'll never listen. I mean, first and foremost, our best smelling author crew, Shane Eason, that dirty Canadian, and Becca and Julie Jones all went with us. Which is amazing. Julie's a regular. I think she's been more times than us now. But it was Becca and Shane's first time, so that was really cool. We even determined that we are going to move out of writing and start a cologne line for writers called Rejection.
Smells like dead roses.
Smells like dead roses. So that was a thing. Mark Leslie Lefebvre, I always say his name wrong. It's embarrassing. He was amazing. We got to eat dinner with him and hang out with him a bunch. That guy's awesome. Mm-hmm. Everyone who runs the conference is super awesome. Kevin J. Anderson, Rebecca Mesta, Marie, all of them, like they just do such a good job. It's such a great conference. And there's definitely a million other people we should shout out. I'm just struggling to think. Kelly, right. Kelly Adams.
Yeah, I was going to say we made some new friends. Kelly, Ian. I feel like there were more. Oh, Nick. And we've spoken with him before.
Beef.
But,
Beef. Yeah. He wanted to talk to me and Julie said she was going to send me his number and you haven't done that, Julie Jones. I have received no number. The beef is sad. I promise you. Now we got to meet Julie's husband, Steve, for the first time. That was cool. Mm-hmm. He is not a writer, but he is a rock star. So he almost fit in with us. We're basically the same thing, right?
Yeah. It looks just like your brother.
He does look just like my brother. It's disturbing, but he was a cool guy. I'm trying to think of other highlights.
I won another door prize.
Yeah, JH won another door prize, as she does, which this one was really funny because I was sitting between JH and Shane. And as they were getting ready to call the name, I leaned over and I was like, Shane Eason. And then they were like, JH Fleming. And I was like, F you, Shane. Yeah, that made me happy. It was funny too when I introduced Shane to Mark Leslie Lefebvre. I said, "Mark, this is Shane Eason, my favorite Canadian, and Shane, this is Mark Leslie Lefebvre, my favorite Canadian." Which Shane, of course, got the joke because it's from the podcast where every Canadian we refer to as our favorite Canadian. And Mark would kind of gave me a funny look, and I explained it right. And I was like, he goes, have you had a bunch of Canadians on? We're like, yeah, we've had a few, you know, and like Shane and I started listening to them, you know, like Gerald Brandt and Sherry Peters and Susan Forrest. And Mark, because we're listening to Mark, looks at me and goes, how do you know so many Canadians? So we had to explain how at World Fantasy we were adopted by Canadians, which maybe that led Mark to adopt us too. I don't know. they host a special dinner they call their VIP dinner, and basically, like, everyone who's attending, like, gets to sit with one of the guest speakers or whatever for dinner, and you sort of get to choose, like, you get to rank who you want to sit with the most. And so we put Mark at the top of the list, and that's who we ended up sitting with. He liquored me up. Well, I'm going to be honest about that. He bought me a lot of drinks. It was lovely. But he also showered our whole table with gifts, which was pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And also, he's just super fun. So if you go to Superstars and you're thinking about the VIP dinner and you're looking at the list of names, Mark's got to be at the top of it. That dude's amazing.
For sure.
One night, somebody brought a Ghostbuster truck up to the hotel. That was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun. I'm trying to think of what else. There's so much. It just all becomes a blur.
Yeah, a lot of just really cool panels that we got to sit in on. People we got to meet and visit with. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would have to say, for anyone pursuing writing as a business, which, if you're listening to this podcast, unless you just love the sound of our voices, that's probably why you're here. Highly recommend Superstars, because it's the only one that focuses entirely on the business. And there's no way you're not going to learn something, whether you're pursuing traditional publishing or indie or both. There is a little bit of all of it for everyone. And the schedule is just, it's intense. There's so much, right? Yeah. So I know, like, we listened to one from a representative from Podium Audio about how they do audiobooks for indie authors. There was a panel on resilience for authors we sat in on. A contracts one we did?
Yes, one on contracts, another on mentorship, dictation, collaboration with other authors.
Collaboration, right. I'm actually going to pull up the sked because I still got it, right?
Yep. I was going to add one more thing, because one of my employers was actually a little surprised on this, so I felt it was worth calling out. So apparently it's more of a thing to have kind of like more niche conferences. So like something focused entirely on science fiction and fantasy, for example, or entirely on children's books. But this one is kind of a catch-all for all of them. Like anything you learn could be applied to whatever you're writing, whatever genre or age group you're targeting. And at least according to Jana, like, that's not common. Like, a lot of them are more genre focused.
Yeah, this one's just really so focused on the business. I'll just read some of the panel names that they had, right? So this is Thursday morning, advanced book marketing, legacy planning for writers, meaning what to do with your IP when you die, right?
Mm-hmm.
Query letters 101 workshop, as in you're going to come in and sit down and try to write query letters, and we're going to tell you what you're doing wrong. Resilience for writers, author branding, creating bestsellers in the audio market, pitch practice sessions, query letters 101 mm-hmm. part 2, writing for tabletop RPGs, mm-hmm. agent real talk, the truths of publishing, editing and polishing your manuscripts in Microsoft Word, pick a successful hybrid author's brain. I mean, that's editing on a deadline, how to query and pitch an agent, Kickstarter panel discussion, navigating the business of children's book writing. Yeah, it's just creating a successful mm-hmm. podcast. We probably should have gone to that one.
Right. Yeah, there was one specifically on Patreon as well, but I think we had something else at the same time, so I missed it.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's just a ton, like, from a learning standpoint. Right. I mean, networking is great too, right? Like, it's almost as good as World Fantasy, if not better. And they do have – there's always at least a couple of agents there and some publishers and – as well as, you know, a lot of big name authors. So obviously, Kevin and Rebecca are both there. Jonathan Mayberry goes every year. This year, David Weber was there, Chuck Gannon, you know, Jim Butcher, I already mentioned,
mm-hmm.
Gil Carriger, Katie Cross. There's a ton. I mean, they always have a good stable of big name authors to come in. Craig Martell, obviously, is pretty big. So they all, you know, they bring in a lot of big name traditional, a lot of big name indie, and yeah, it's just a killer convention, killer conference rather.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. Is there anything else that we should have mentioned, that we should shout out, or anyone in particular we shout out? Gina, the bartender, she's the best.
Heck yeah. Even though it was funny. So last night she was commenting that I'm like the best date ever. from, I guess, a guy's point of view. Because I think there was one night I tried an alcoholic drink and the rest of the time I just got water.
Yeah.
That's how I roll.
Yeah. Yes, you do. And I appreciate it because it means I have a DD.
So, I mean, I'm seeing some potential for that kind of conference and overlap in your music career. What are the odds you have perfect pitch?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, boy. I don't know what hole we dragged you out of, but we're going to put you back in it. Oh, let's do the news. All right. For our news this week, thought we'd start with a little Worldcon awards drama update. I don't have one. Nobody knows what happened still. But a couple of members have actually stepped down based on the controversy. But yeah, we still don't really know what happened exactly, and we probably never will. Woohoo! On to the next news story.
Gosh, this is still crazy to me.
The Worldcon thing?
Yeah, it's crazy. Whole drama. We talked about it, yeah, a couple episodes ago, but
it's crazy to you that people don't know how to behave?
Not that part, just like the way it all fell out and now this with like no one explaining anything and people resigning. Like,
yeah. I don't think we'll ever know exactly 100% for sure what happened or not.
Yeah. Well, the next news is about Worldcon. So I think we've talked about before how the bids work and like for the upcoming years, different places or at least people running conventions in those places can bid to be the next Worldcon location and then attendees can vote on it. So it looks like Montreal was added to the 2027 Worldcon bid and it's up against Tel Aviv at the moment.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Which is interesting. And I see for 2028, it looks like we've got Australia and Uganda, which is also interesting.
Yeah. Do you see 2029? So
2029. Dublin, heck yeah.
But the funniest thing is it jumps like, okay, that is 2031, right? And then what does that next one say? Just I can't quite see the year.
2073.
Yeah, somebody has put in a bid to have Worldcon come to Minneapolis in the year 2073. Oh, wait.
Like, why?
I wonder if that is – well, no, it says it from the Progress Report 2014, but right below that they said it's traditional at Worldcon for groups to run hoax bids, often for imaginary places as an excuse to hold parties. A list of current hoax bids can be found here. So Minneapolis is not one of those. It's legit. So Minneapolis in 2073.
Yeah.
Hoax bids. Minneapolis in 1873. Dublin, California. Oh, so
that might be a hoax one because it's got Minneapolis 1873, Minneapolis in 73, which I'm guessing is 1973. So if that's the pattern, then 2073 would be the obvious next one.
I wonder if because – here's my theory now that you've said that. Here's my theory that these were the jokes whenever they did them. But because of these jokes, someone has already got a bid in to actually have it in Minneapolis on 2073. That would be my guess.
Maybe.
Lichtenstein. That's funny. Huh.
Night Valley in Eternity.
All right.
Ganymede 2110.
It's nice. Not Night Valley, that's Night Vale. You can only find it in Eternity.
Oh, it's so small. Yep.
That's funny.
Yes. Welcome to Night Vale. No, wrong podcast.
Wrong podcast. We're in the... Oh, no. We did talk to another podcaster about the possibility of doing a comic book crossover episodes. So we'll see how that shakes out. This next news story is hilarious and disturbing to me. I don't know if it's actually real, but I kind of wish it was, but it's a list of Cormac McCarthy's Valentine's Day candy hearts. So it's the candy hearts with quotes from Cormac McCarthy books with hits such as "Nobody wants to be here." There is no God. The world is ruthless. Everywhere the dying groan and the horses lay screaming. Things can always get worse. This one's terrible. It would take a hell of a wife to beat no wife at all.
I gotta start reading this guy.
Every road ends in death. Somewhere, two hunted animals are trembling.
Oh my gosh.
You have my whole heart. You always did. Oh. Yeah, it'd be funny if somebody actually made those and passed them out.
Wow.
It would make me laugh.
That makes me want them to be real, but then have like a whole like just book one. So it can be like quotes from any book. That'd be fun.
I would like to have a line of something with just Axel quotes in it. That would make me really happy.
Yeah.
Because they're furry.
Because they're furry.
Dude, I would wear that shirt and like never explain it.
Here's the thing. What I would have to do is have to have like special ones that have an asterisk for things the actual real life Axel has said that I just put into the books. Because that's one of them.
I'm just saying, what you need is that goes big on the front. And on the back, it's got the title of the book it came from. And I give no explanation, but I will wear that shit everywhere.
I like it.
All right, next news story.
Shirt. Wear that shirt everywhere.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what you said. I'll fix it in post. Mm-hmm. I'll fix it in post. Yeah, next story. We're good.
Yep. All right. So Orbit has a new imprint. It's Orbit Works, and they've just announced four titles, and it looks like they are open to submissions to both agented and unagented authors, which is pretty big because there aren't a lot of bigger publishers that take unagented submissions. It looks like your novel must be science fiction or fantasy. It has to be an original work, so no fan fiction. Must be at least 70,000 words. Must be finished. If it's part of a series, you have to do a series outline with a short synopsis of each planned book, as well as include, you know, how many books is this going to be? And then just the standard, you have to upload it in an acceptable format. Have to be 18 years old to submit. But that's pretty big, since the only other one I can think off the top of my head is Daw and sometimes Angry Robot.
Well, Bane always is a slush pile, right?
Right. But, yep, Bane too.
But this is specifically, I think they're just specifically doing ebooks.
Okay, so just ebooks. They're not doing print versions or no, audiobooks?
I think they're just doing ebooks at this point. I think that's what Orbit Works is all about. I think it's just about doing, I was trying to find if they had someone here that it said that for sure. But that, I think that's what it is. I think they just do ebooks at this time. Which it makes sense, right? Because you could do that and be open to the public because it's pretty low risk, right? So for an ebook, you're going to pay your editorial staff, you're going to pay for a cover design, but you're not soaking in the print cost. So for them, it's less risk to take somebody on, right? And take a chance on them. And then if it's successful, then, you know, I'm sure Orbit will probably want to publish the paperback and the audiobook, right?
Would hope so.
So still pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Chris, you're up.
In our continued coverage of our robot overlords.
I'm going to leave in the chair creak. this is really funny, I guess. It's not funny if you're part of the royal family. You probably are pretty annoyed. But apparently Amazon has been having to remove a bunch of AI-generated books about King Charles and his cancer. Mostly because the AI is just flagrantly making up stuff about his cancer, I guess. So they've been fighting to get a bunch of books taken down and removed.
Wow.
Good old AI books. So now we have AI King Charles, we have AI Mushrooms, AI Atlases, and AI textbooks.
Yup.
What could ever go wrong?
I also like that your ads on your screen are a bunch of slinky dresses.
You know how I roll. The Google knows me. They know what I'm all about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Happy Valentine's Day to me. and then our final news story, AI news story. The lawsuit against the OpenAI companies is not going swimmingly at this particular moment if you're rooting for the author side of it. There have been multiple suits, and they kind of put them all, they consolidated them all into like one suit. And there were six counts raised, and four of those six have been dismissed. And that included count two, vicarious infringement. Count three, OpenAI removed or altered copyright management information. Count five, negligence under the unfair competition law. Count six, unjust enrichment. So that leaves count one, direct copyright infringement, and count four, unfair competition, as the two remaining counts still in play. But the authors and publishers who raised the suits have until March 13th to make amendments to their statements, basically, and then to resubmit them to try to get those other counts reinstated as part of the suit. Legal stuff. Fun, yay. Fun. You know, I don't know where this is going to go. And even if I wasn't an author, it would still be kind of rooting for the side of the authors here, just because the companies who, you know, this is targeting, you know, Meta and Microsoft and, you know, all these big players, they're going to have enough power as their AI continues to develop and gets better and better. This or something like this will set a good precedent for creatives that we're just not going to be totally boned for the foreseeable future.
Right.
You know, I think the only reason that we haven't heard of Apple as a major player is how do you put out an IA?
That's ridiculous, Chris. Robots don't eat fruit.
Hedonism bot does. Eating those grapes.
While I humiliate a pheasant. Nothing sordid, I assure you.
All right, so that's our news.
All right, for our tools segment this time, we're going to talk about book funeral.
Not what I wrote in the show notes at all, Christopher.
at least I didn't replace yours.
What I actually wrote was book funnel, which Chris assumed I put wrong and wrote in book funeral question mark. Which honestly, somebody should make an app called book funeral and let us know how that goes.
Yeah.
Is that where you go after Goodreads?
book funnel. Geez. Let's talk about book funnel. I don't think we have before. And book funnel is really, really cool. Primarily used by indie authors, but I don't see any reason why a trad author couldn't or shouldn't use it. So book funnel, do you want to explain it? You might do better than me.
Yeah, so basically you can upload a digital copy of your book and then it'll generate like a link and you can use that to send your book to, say, beta readers, or you can create like a reader magnet that's connected to your newsletter. So I've got mine set up where you can go to my website right now, sign up for my newsletter, and you'll immediately get an email with a book funnel link to a free short story, which is pretty cool. But you could do that as an indie author, trad author, hybrid, whatever.
Yeah, it's super awesome. That's how I'm using it as well. It really, I mean, I think you can use it for direct sales as well. I think people use it for direct sales in some kind of way.
Right.
But yeah, the reader magnet is the part I use it for. It's really, really good for that. And it's very low cost. I think it's $20-something a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Somewhere in that range.
Yeah, I guess I didn't actually get a chance to meet him and talk to him, but the creator of it, Damon Courtney, was at Superstars as well. But yeah, it's just a really great platform that just does what you need it to do. Like if you need a way to put a digital book in somebody's hand outside of a retailer like Amazon, like you just need a way to be able to directly put a book in somebody's hand, it's super great for that.
Right.
I got distracted by the constant dongs coming from somebody's computer.
Not mine.
It's not?
I can't even hear it.
Sounds like somebody's got Discord up. Wait, is it me? Because that would be embarrassing. It's not.
I mean, I don't have a bunch of dongs on my computer, so.
No comment. We were talking about Book Funnel, not dongs. Yep. I had something poignant I wanted to say about Book Funnel. So the two ways I've used it, JH already mentioned one. I also had some opportunities where I wanted to give away some books for very specific mm-hmm. reasons. And so I was able to put them up on there, and it creates a nice landing page. And I remember what I wanted to say. The cool thing about it is they'll give the ebook out in basically any format that somebody would want to use it in, including just like pull it up in a web browser and read it type of thing. Which is really, really cool. And it's also cool from like the standpoint for like direct sales or whatever, even the reader magnet. So like if somebody has some kind of drama getting their book to work, they're not going to reach out to you. They're going to reach out to Book Funnel. Or if they reach out to you, you can push them towards Book Funnel. So yeah, it's really high quality. Highly recommend. If you have a newsletter, it's kind of a must have, I think, to have a reader magnet and give people reason to want to follow you around.
Agreed. Yeah, I love it so far.
Yeah, it's super great. And it's super cost effective. So thank you, Book Funnel. All right, for Creatives on Fire this week, we have two topics as normal, one about the writing business and one about the financial independence business. So starting with the writing one, we're going to talk about submitting to publishers and sort of the least you need to know about submitting to publishers. Now, if you listen to our querying agents, it's not going to be all that different, but it'll be maybe a little different, right? A
little bit.
Do you want to start us off?
Yeah, I would first want to say that it first depends on what sort of publisher you're querying. Like we already kind of mentioned that there are only a few of like the bigger ones that are actually open to unagented submissions.
Yep.
From my experience, they're pretty similar to submitting to an agent. Some of them have their own special forms. I know I've submitted to Bain before and they had like a certain thing where it's like they wanted it as an RTF file, which I don't think I've ever seen anyone else do. Most of them want like the doc or docx or something. Right. So that one was kind of unique. Otherwise, they generally just want like, you know, a query letter, maybe a synopsis, that sort of thing. But if you're submitting to like a smaller press, that's going to be completely different. A lot of them is just going to be, you're just looking at their website and seeing like, what are their requirements? What are the formats they want? And in my own experience, it's much more casual, if that makes sense. I mean, you still want to be professional when you do it, but it's a whole different ball game, at least for me.
Yeah, much like we joked around when we were talking about querying agents, like they, you know, they all have different little things that they require of you. And that's going to be true of virtually every publisher, big or small. So I remember working with one smaller one at one point that had me do the most, like the more I kept rereading it, I'm like, is this really what they want me to do? And it was like, instead of having the whole manuscript double spaced, they just wanted an extra space between each paragraph, right?
Right. Yeah. So each paragraph is, I know exactly who you mean because I've also done that. Each paragraph is single spaced with an extra space between paragraphs.
Yeah. So instead of a double spaced manuscript like normal, single spaced paragraphs with a double space in between the paragraphs, basically, which is a lot of fun to make sure you've got right in a book. It's a weird way to do it.
I will also add with that publisher from my own experience. So I never officially submitted. That was one I met at a convention. They asked me to bring like a printed version of my stuff, which I did. Mm-hmm. And they read it and then spoke to me like the convention's still going on and said, yes, they wanted to publish my stuff. So like there was never an official email exchange or anything. And now when I submit other books to them, it's just like, hey, here's a new book. There you go.
Yeah, but even, I mean, good advice for the road for most people would be even when that happens, even when you meet that small publisher and they tell you to send it, or you meet the big publisher that tells you to send it, any which way you go about it, the smart thing to do before you send it would be to go ahead and go look at what their requirements are and then meet those before you send it to them.
Absolutely.
Just because that's going to be super professional and it might impress them that you actually took the time to go look when they told you to send it over. They're going to know that you put it in their desired format. So that'll probably get you some brownie points. But honestly, that's pretty much it, right? I mean, the reality is that if you want to submit to the big ones, there's not many that you can without an agent. Mm-hmm. At which point, you know, I imagine your agent is going to tell you what format it needs to be in, or they might just format it for you because they're going to know, or they might not even matter at that point. Those rules might go out the window. But yeah, that's it, really. Follow the guidelines.
Yeah, it's kind of the same you follow the guidelines, have a query letter ready still, and a synopsis just in case they need it.
Yep. If they require those, make sure you have them. It's good to have them anyway, that way, because what might happen is, you know, they might turn around and say, I just want to see a synopsis. Give me a synopsis.
Yep.
So if you have that to hand, you can get it to them quicker. They're painful to write, but you should probably do it if you're going to be submitting.
Yep. And I was going to reiterate, a query or a summary is typically like what you'd read on the back of a book, where it's what the book's about, but you don't get into a whole lot of the details and you don't say the ending. A synopsis, you're sharing everything, all the major plot points plus the ending, all spoilers.
Yeah. And written in you're not supposed to put it in your voice or anything. It's supposed to read like a technical document that just rolls through your story. It literally is like the lifeless. It's like, take your beautiful piece of art and squeeze every bit of life out of it and make it the most boring, dull kitchen manual that you can.
The other thing is, they still want it to be like engaging. Like, they want to read that and they'll decide if they want to see more based on that a lot of the time. So somehow they still want it to be something that draws their attention and gets them excited.
Yeah, it's been a little facetious. You still want to try to write it with your voice, but it's just really hard. They're really hard to do. They're no fun. Nobody enjoys writing a synopsis.
Right. And to clarify, so like a lot of the synopses, it's one pages, maybe two. That's it for your entire novel.
Yeah. Squeeze it in there quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing to call out to make sure that you know is, when you're going to be submitting to publishers, make sure you know how long you have to wait before you're allowed to send it to somebody else.
Yep.
Because they all should post that. And I don't know, is there a standard if they don't have it posted?
It varies. It's the same with agents as well. A lot of them will say it's either one of two things. Like, after so long, if you haven't heard from me, send me a nudge as a reminder. Or if you haven't heard from me by, you know, 4 weeks or whatever that time frame is, assume it's a no.
Yeah.
As far as if they don't say that, it's kind of up to you. I don't know if there's a standard. I started using Query Tracker not too long ago, and I don't know if we've talked about that. Maybe we can go into more depth with that on another episode. But that one, I've seen people who wait as short as 30 days before they consider it a no and move on. Others, you know, have a standard of like 120 days, some longer. So it just kind of varies.
Yep. So you got to make sure you know that. Set yourself a Google Calendar or something so that you don't do a stupid and submit your book when you're not supposed to somebody. So, I mean, otherwise, that's really it, right? Follow the guidelines. Don't think you're the exception. Don't think that your work is so brilliant that you can ignore the guidelines, because it doesn't matter how brilliant it is. They will throw it in the garbage.
Yep.
All right. I think that pretty much covers the publishing side of it. The other thing that we were going to talk about is we were going to rehash a little bit the, you know, concepts around reducing our expenses, right? So we talked about the 4% rule, and we talked about why we sort of how financial independence kind of became the second pathway to us achieving our dreams. And, you know, the 4% rule provide some very big numbers that get a little intimidating. So we talked about saving strategies and a few different things. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about reducing expenses again. And I'm not going to tell anybody to cut out their $5 coffees unless you get like 8 million of them a day, you know? It's not really about that. It's more individualized. And I think most of us have some amount of waste we have in our spending that could probably save us quite a bit of money. Obviously, everybody's a different place in life. Some people, maybe they don't. Maybe they don't make enough that there's any room to cut. But for a lot of us, there is. I know I make stupid decisions still. Like, I'm pretty good. We've been saving for a while, and I still make some pretty bonehead decisions occasionally. I'm trying to think of one. The toys I bought myself for Christmas.
Yeah, I was about to say the toys.
Toys I bought myself for Christmas. Yeah, I didn't need all those. And I didn't really spend money on them. I used my Amazon points. But still, I could have saved those Amazon points for something else, right? Yeah. Why are you laughing at me, Chris? I like toys. Shut up. Chris's face is judging me so hard right now.
You're an adult telling me you bought toys.
Yeah.
I have to put the words together in my assumption.
Oh, well, be appropriate. Get your mind out of the gutter. It wasn't those kind of toys. It was literally like Boba Fett action figures.
Yep.
Oh, that tracks.
Yeah, Boba Fett, Wolverine, I got you Han Solo.
Yeah.
Mandalorian.
It was really your Gandalf. Fault. If you think about
it. You wanted them. No, you looked them up, said you wanted them for Christmas, so I got you some.
Yeah, you did. That was amazing.
And then you went all out and bought a dozen more.
Because you got me some and I wanted more because they were so good. The point is, that was an unnecessary expense. I did not need to do that. That was wasteful. We've been pretty good for the most part, though. Like, lately, we've been really good with our grocery shopping and eating out and things. There's still occasionally, like, I don't know, I'll get into some kind of dumb thing and buy stuff I don't need. And I think
I was going to add, it was funny you mentioned grocery shopping. So I feel like sometimes that's my downfall where that's why I always want to know ahead of time, kind of what we're planning to eat for the week, because then I can just make a list and be like, we need this, this, and this, and move on. But when we don't do that, it's easier for me to stray and be like, ooh, let's get this random thing I just saw and now I want.
Right. Yeah. It's really easy to run into trouble at the grocery store and be like, oh, well, this sounds fun, but now I need this, this, and this to make it. And next thing you know, it's like, oh, I've spent three times as much as I was planning at this here grocery store today. But at the same time, like, and that's why I wanted to put the value-based spending on the same thing, right? We've talked about this a lot, and that was a big one for Chris early on when we were first talking about it, because it's really important. It's to, like, put the value on the things you are spending money on, right? So obviously, we just went to the conference, and that costs a lot of money, and I spent a lot more eating out and stuff than we normally would have, right? And no regrets there, but I also told the story at the beginning about how I have a broken trunk. So the first thing I did when I got home was I ordered the part to replace on my broken trunk, which didn't actually cost me as much as I would have thought, but it wouldn't have mattered, right? Because I just need to get it fixed. So I just went ahead and did it, and I didn't think anything about it and ordered the part I needed, and it got here today and I fixed it. I need my trunk to close, right? So it's not really in question. Did we need to eat out while we were in Colorado Springs? Well, we needed to eat and we flew, so we weren't able to take food with us. So yes, plus oftentimes those were when we were eating out, we were going with friends and people from the conference, and you know, you just have to make the most of it. But also we were being, I think, pretty wise for the most part. We were choosing things that were reasonable. I guess I did buy lunch for everybody one day. But that was just because.
But again, these are like networking lunches and can totally be tax write-off.
That
so
is
it's
true.
Different.
Business expenses.
Yeah, it's different if we're just going out every night while we're home. Like, these actually had a purpose.
Yeah, and the only reason I actually bought food for the whole table is because the restaurant was incredibly slow and we were running late to get back to the conference. And it was like, I'm not going to sit here and watch every single person have to run their credit card through. So it's like, take mine, pay for the whole thing. Let's be done, you know?
Yep.
But like, yeah, so, but we're not continuing that trend now that we're home. We're not eating out every night. Well, I guess we did last night.
So, yeah, last night was also different because normally we have dinner with friends one night a week, and they had some kid stuff going on. They weren't going to be able to cook. So it was either go meet them at our local restaurant or we don't get to see them this week.
Yeah, but you know where I did do good, actually? because I have no drama with that one either. But I did a good example would be today, because we haven't had a chance to go to the grocery store since we've been back. So I didn't have the stuff I would normally have to take my lunch. And I was like, oh man, I just have to go out and eat. And I was like, man, or I could just take this giant bag of beef jerky and a protein drink, and that can be my lunch today. And I won't spend any money I haven't already spent. So that's what I did. So I literally, my lunch today was a protein drink, a bag of beef jerky, and a pack of almonds. So, but I think the value-based spending, you know, it's really like comes down to like weighing what you're about to make a purchase on against. this is Chris in your chair just totally made me lose my stream of thought. I remember where I was going with any of that.
Value-based spending, weighing what you're making a purchase on versus.
Right. So really the value-based spending thing, it's going to come into play when it's like, oh, I have the money to go buy this thing and I want it right now. But you go, okay, do I actually need that right now? Does it help me accomplish my goals? And maybe it doesn't have to, and that's okay too, right? But it's also weighing it against the other things that, you know, you could be spending it on, right? So I often find myself going, yeah, I could buy this right now and that would be fun. But does it mean more to me than adding that same amount to my future and retiring early? And sometimes I say yes, sometimes I say no, right? So if I go back to before Christmas, there was a day we were at the bookstore and there were a couple of board games that looked really cool to me that were like cooperative board games. There was a Lord of the Rings game and an X-Men game. And I was like, those look like they'd be super fun and we'd play them together. Plus, you know, Christmas was coming up, so I thought there might be a chance that, you know, one of our friends might come around or a couple of them that wanted to play games. So I didn't have to bat an eye at that. I was like, I'll spend this $60 because I know we're going to get some value back out of it and it'll be fun. And you know, we've played them both at least once now.
Yeah, they're really fun. I like both of them. I mean, obviously I'm biased toward Lord of the Rings, but I like the X-Men one too.
Yeah, they're both good.
See, if I had known all it took to get to see you was feeding you, I'd have paid for lunch, man. I'd have taken you on a Valentine's Day today.
You've met me before. Have you? Look at how fat I am. Obviously, I'll take free food anytime I can get it. Often free booze, too. Shout out Mark Lizzie LaFave again.
Oh, you got it right that time.
Yeah. And I will shout out to the other waitress at the hotel. I don't know her name. All I know is that her booth was always the one on the left, and she made a mean old fashioned. Anyways, would either of you like to say anything about reducing expenses or value-based spending?
Well, I think I just covered my bit at saying it was, you know, worth it to see Phil, but obviously he's not up for that.
Hater.
I was just going to add that for me, when it really comes up is kind of like impulse buying.
Yeah.
So like either I'll think of something that, like, oh, that'd be really cool to have, or I'm in the store and I see something that I didn't know existed before and suddenly I really want it. And part of it's just really getting a handle on those things. And, you know, you may give in sometimes, but like it's a practice for every time it comes up, like, okay, I'm not going to give in this time. And it gets easier the more you do it.
As long as the stuff isn't like, you know, crucial for survival this week.
Right.
I like to look at it the exact same as, you know, when you're moving and you try and decide, am I packing this or not? If I haven't used this in 6 months, I probably don't need it.
Yeah.
Yep.
So if you get to the end of 6 months and you still want it, it's probably okay to buy it.
Yeah, I think that's a good take. I think JH said something interesting in there as well about it being a, you know, the impulse buys that really is like a muscle. It's almost addictive, right? So like if you let it slacken off and you don't do it very often, you don't challenge yourself very often, you fall into a trap where it's really easy to do. Whereas when you're practicing that and strengthening that muscle, it's a little easier, you know. It's like you see some kind of little gadget and you're like, oh, well, this could be interesting for whatever. And then you go, nah, don't really need it. Pass, you know. I've got a good example of that recently that paid off too, is there were some cabinets we were looking at getting. They would serve a very good purpose and they would be very nice to have. But they were kind of expensive and I was like, I can't make myself do this. I just couldn't make myself do it. I was like, I don't want them that much, you know? And then I was like, you know what? I will just sit on these for a while. I'll put them into camel, which honestly, if anybody doesn't know what camel is, it's amazing. And we could probably do a whole freaking section on that alone. But camel is a site where you can copy and paste an Amazon page link into it. And it'll bring up sales data or price data about that product, what it's been running new, what it's been running by third parties, blah, blah, blah. And you can put your email address in there and set a threshold. If this product goes below X amount, I want you to email me. And so I did that. And I was like, if these cabinets ever drop below $100, and they were, I don't remember what they were. I think they're close to 200 or over 200 even. And I was just like, if it ever drops below $100, I'll buy them on the spot and I won't think anything of it because I know that'll be worth it. And yeah, it'll just take care of this problem that I just can't bring myself to pay more for. And sure enough, you know, I probably put them on that list 8 months ago, a year ago. I don't even know. Maybe longer. It might have been a year and a half, 2 years ago. And all of a sudden, they popped up under $100. Sold. Cool. Now we got those cabinets we needed.
Yeet.
All right. I think perhaps we have reached the end.
Woohoo.
Tell the people where to find you, JH.
You can find me at jhfleming.net. I am on all the social medias, all the music sites as my band Wildwood Minstrels. You can find me on Fiverr, though honestly, if you need editing at this point, I would just check out my website because I also have a way to contact me on there. And let's see, is there anywhere else? You can sign up for my newsletter and get some cool stuff. Sign up for my Patreon and get some cool stuff. And we're going to be at FinCon next weekend. By the time this airs, it'll be only a few days away. So, yeah, be in person there.
True story. And if you're looking for me, you can find me in JH's heart because it's Valentine's Day. And also Chris's heart because he loves me as well. And in Canada because a lot of people in Canada love me.
Very true.
I'm going to be a busy Valentine's Cupid Santa Claus flying around the world, flapping my little wings in my underwear, shooting arrows at people. But while I'm doing that, you should be buying my books, philipdreyerduncan.com, and the Amazon, where the first Blade Mage book is up to 50 reviews, which makes me real happy.
Mm-hmm.
And as usual, Chris does not want to talk to you. So if you want to talk to him, you're out of luck unless you reach me on one of the social media things and say, hashtag Chris is hot, and then I will be happy to relay your message to him. Bye, Chris.
Bye.
Bye.